Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at hrnradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Kathleen DiCiara, is the author of The Hidden Connection and Resilience. Kathleen is a functional nutritionist. She is well-known all over the country. She teaches seminars that many doctors attend, and folks, you're in for a great treat today. And I'm saying this because I believe it 100%. Kathleen's one of the most knowledgeable people I know about working with our kids and making major differences. So welcome, Kathleen.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Andy.
Oh, thank you. This is a great treat for me and our listeners. Kathleen, tell us about you. It's kind of nice to tell our listeners, you know, why you're doing what you're doing and so forth. So enlighten us.
Sure. I am, as you said, a functional nutritionist, but really I'm more of an educator, I would say, nowadays than a researcher. But my official title is a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner, which really is just a fancy way of saying that I use very diagnostic and more functional medicine tools like laboratory testing and microbiome testing, stool cultures, and DNA testing and things like that to look at really optimal functioning in the body. And then I use nutrition as a means and a way to initiate healing. So I study individualized and specialized diets for specific conditions and specialized, really specialized diets for specific conditions as they relate to different biochemical imbalances in the body. Just so that I can understand chronic conditions and the different patterns of diseases and how nutrition interplays with those types of conditions. So really being an expert on the relationship between chronic disease and food. So my passion really is patterns of disease, understanding chronic disease, and how we can start to bridge the gap between using food as a healing mechanism for people, because it's something that everyone is doing every day. And I think that people are trying to use nutrition in a reductionistic way. They're taking foods out of their diet to help them feel better. Very few people are using foods in a healing way and looking at the healing compounds in our foods and bringing them into the diet as a way to initiate healing. So that's really what I am most interested in, because I think Mother Nature has provided those healing compounds hidden within the food, and it's our job really as researchers to find out what those are and how to bring that to the consumer.
Kathleen, what I found very interesting about our conversation in preparation for the radio show, and you were telling me about how, you know, we can't get away from these things that cause difficulties, especially autism, the food, the air, the water, the vaccines, and all that. And you made a very interesting comment that has been on my mind since. You said, since these things are not going to go away, how can we prepare our bodies to be able to deal with it more efficiently and effectively? I thought, gee, I've never heard that before. So it's a very interesting take on your approach, and we're going to hear more about it today. Before we get into that, tell me a little bit about how you got into this. You have a son who is on the spectrum, am I correct?
Yes. So what got me into this really was my own son's experience. He was diagnosed over 10 years ago with autism, and I myself, around that same time, had a healing crisis, and I was put on permanent disability for life. I used to be an executive at a Fortune 500. I was doing investor relations, and so this was not my line of work. And I had developed sudden onset neuropathy in my legs and ended up needing back surgery, and then woke up from that back surgery with sudden onset paralysis. So I had very severe complications to my surgical procedure, which then snowballed into autoimmune conditions, fibromyalgia, chronic pain syndrome, and lost the job that I loved and was put on permanent disability for life. And around that same time, my son, who was three, was diagnosed with autism, and he had already had seven other diagnostic disabilities. So he had apraxia and severe speech-language disorder and selective mutism and sensory processing disorder and cognitive delays and mitochondrial issues and gastrointestinal issues. So by the time he had reached three and received the diagnosis of autism, or at the time, you know, he had already had developmental delays. So we really, by the time I started to explore this other area of work, it was really out of desperation. I mean, I had nowhere else to turn. I was not getting any better, and so I had to take my own health into my own hands. And this was how I ended up healing myself. And then I didn't really think that I was going to do anything in terms of autism. More importantly, we just looked at it as how could we help Stephen live his best life, really. I knew that I was better and getting better every day. And I was more curious than anything, that could I help him read? Could I potentially help him make social connections? Could we help some of the other more physical things he was experiencing? It wasn't like, oh, I have an idea, you know, let's try to get rid of autism. It never even entered our mind. I mean, he had been in occupational therapy and physical therapy and speech and language therapy for over 8 years. I mean, it just didn't even occur to us that there was any other way than what we were doing, which was just really to help him manage, you know, this condition that he had. And he was happy, certainly, and content. And when we just thought we would give him, you know, change his nutrition and start looking at it a little differently, it was really just to improve his quality of life. And the change was so profoundly remarkable. I mean, his body responded so well that he was medically undiagnosed at age 11.
And wow.
It was a profound response that his body had. So he and I both really, our stories really serve as the passion for my work, because they remind me, you know, of course, every day of our body's innate capacity to heal. And so I sort of use that as the catalyst to keep me going and to inspire my work and my research and my passion to help other people. And yes. So, yeah, it's been really,
you know,
transforming.
Kathleen, what's amazing, and, you know, I've had so many moms on the show who have done miraculous work with their children. One of them is now one of my best friends, and Mary Romaniak, she's similar stuff, and Elaine Hall from the Miracle Project. And what I admire about you ladies, and it seems consistently almost all ladies, is that when you have this problem, you're like you become zealots to find out how you can fix it. And what's kind of interesting to me is I don't see too many men doing this. It's almost always moms.
Yeah. Yeah. You
just
know, I think it's, well, sometimes, you know, I think a mother's drive is unique, you know, in that. I don't want to sell any dads short. I think it's just the way the female brain works, and we're sort of driven by our heart. And it is something that, you know, a passion that we have, I think, for our children. And I think it's hard for us to not, I think that our passion to continue on is really tied to their success. So, you know, we're really, that maternal bond is so intense and so strong. So it doesn't surprise me. But I will say, in defense of my husband, you know, that I think the families that really have a collective engagement and support and do it as a team are the ones that have the greatest success. And, you know, my husband was very supportive and very much on board, and that we really changed as a family, that our principles and our values around health and around our food and around what we stand for really changed. And I think that that was probably the biggest catalyst for Stephen. Because I think, you know, and even what I teach in my practice, and certainly when I give lectures all over the world, when I teach other practitioners, it's very, very important that we understand that within every family unit is a community. And even from a microbial standpoint, because I talk a lot about the microbiome, We are also supporting children on the spectrum from a microbial standpoint. And when you have members of that community that are very strong in their health, they are really influencing the health of the child with autism as well. So you really want every member of that community to be strong and vibrant. And that really influences whether or not that child is going to be continuing to get strong because you're sharing the microbes even in the community of the home. And so I would just say that everybody being engaged is a very, very powerful healing mechanism. So to the extent where we can get the dads on board.
Well, I also have to say that in past conversations we've had, again, in support of your husband, you've always said how, you know, lucky you are because how supportive, helpful, and when moms have a husband who is like yours, it makes the job a lot easier. It's still a extremely difficult job, but I hope he listens to this and hears that you say such nice things about him, because you do.
Yeah.
Kathleen, let me get into some of the meat and potatoes of what folks want to hear. Give us a little, in your two books, The Hidden Connection and the new one, Resilience, that's coming out in the spring, is that correct?
Yes, let's hope so.
Tell us, give us some insider thoughts on your chapters and what you found, and you pick wherever you want to start.
Okay. Well, when I originally wrote The Hidden Connection, that was in 2014, and that was really just to make a general introduction to the general population, really. It wasn't specifically about autism. I talked a little bit about my story and about Stephen and our experience, and it was sort of threaded throughout the book with the fact that we had these conditions and we had never really made the connection. But it was really to introduce the general population to this idea that the food that we were eating and our lifestyle and our daily habits were really contributing to chronic disease. I think that, you know, there's this undiscussed or unknown fact that people, I think people in our community are people that are sort of really discussing what you and I think are constantly talking about, are very aware of a lot of the main issues. But the general population or people who might have a child that's newly diagnosed with autism may not be aware that there are all of these things in our daily lives that are really contributing to ill health. And we have to really stop regarding children with diarrhea, constipation, dark circles under their eyes, frequent infections, anxiety, insomnia, bloated bellies, developmental delays as healthy enough, okay? And that these things, although they're common today, they're not normal. And what's happening is that this has become an accepted normal, and these symptoms are accepted because the majority of the population is experiencing them. And so I really was trying initially in that book to just start really talking about this hidden connection between the foods we were eating, the fact that we're genetically modifying our foods and spraying them with glyphosate and other pesticides and herbicides, and that there's all of these things breaking down in our food supply and agriculture and the other contaminants and toxins in our environment and our ill health. And we just need to start there to just acknowledge first that there's a problem and really actively participate in this discovery process that, you know what, I need to step back and say, this is really where it is and this is what's happening. If we're sort of chasing the symptoms and then taking that reductionistic approach that I've got asthma and ear infections and chronic symptoms and then I'm running into the pediatrician to get medications for it and treating it and I'm in that vicious cycle, and then I'm getting the antibiotics, and then once I get the antibiotics, I'm now in that vicious pattern. By the time the child is several years later, potentially, you know, early getting developmental delays, and then gets the diagnosis of autism, that trajectory has been in play for years. It's very difficult because now you have this health history that's gone on for several years. And even though it's in that moment that you feel the diagnosis happened, it really has been happening both preterm during pregnancy and all the things that happened up until that point, and then certainly in those early years of life. So much has to happen in terms of the education process. And if people are not willing to talk about it, then we really just can't even get into some of the more heavy detailed discussions. So initially when I wrote that book, it was just to lay down some of that foundation. Now working on resilience, what I'm trying to do now, because the pendulum has swung the other way, and people are now overly supplementing. They're self-diagnosing, they're detoxing, they're trying to eradicate pathogens, they're over-treating the dysfunction because they're at a loss for what to do, the children are sick, and now they're trying to correct damage. And now the pendulum is so far the other way that they're actually disrupting, you know, vulnerable microbiome. And in essence, playing a game of whack-a-mole by trying to address certain types of dysfunction and imbalance, but then creating another set of problems. And so what's happened is they've gotten away from potentially pharmaceutical treatments, but now they're doing disease management using holistic remedies and supplemental approaches, but they're still managing chronic disease. So we haven't reached a place where we've actually really gotten our children, even our children with on the spectrum, to a place of resilience. We're not building resilient, healthy bodies. They're not going to be in that place where they can tolerate the next infection, environmental exposures, things like you and I have talked about, that are going to be around forever. We are always going to have greedy, manipulative biotech companies putting contaminants in our environment. Yes, we want to do something about it and stand up against it, but we also want to make sure that our bodies are resilient and strong enough to withstand assaults that are going to happen all the time. And we can't be so vulnerable that we're just one infection away from a complete destruction. So we have to be working on building a resilient terrain. The health of the host, the individual, is so critical, and practitioners are really getting good at symptom relief and providing people with that place of getting them stable, but they are not good at getting them to that place of resiliency, because the minute they take them off those supplemental protocols, everyone's falling apart, and we're so uncomfortable with that the healing. The healing is messy, and it's hard, and it takes courage to work through some of what needs to happen. So, you know, that's where I see myself going, and I see that the practitioners are craving it. It's what they want. The consumer wants it. Everyone is tired of managing chronic disease, even holistically. So I would say that you know, that's my intention, I think, with resilience, is to really help people not look at what's the plan to do it, but give them the principles. What are the basic principles and guidelines that people can follow that will help them to move in that direction? Because I really think it comes down to our behaviors and our beliefs.
This is great stuff. And I have so many questions I want to ask. As you know, we have to take a short commercial break. Before we do, though, I want to mention our sponsor and then give you a commercial as well, Kathleen. Today's show is being brought to you, folks, through the kind support of AmajorDifference.com. They're the makers of the Ion Cleanse. We have a couple of commercials coming on today. And the gentlemen there who have been so supportive are Neil Mahoney and Glenn Wilhelm. We want to thank them for making our show possible today. And we'll talk more about Ion Cleanse later. But right now we're going to go to a short commercial break, and we'll be back with Kathleen DiChiara, the author of The Hidden Connection and Resilience. And when we come back, we're going to give you the contact information for Kathleen in case you want to call her for a seminar or learn more about her books. We'll be right back.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Hi, folks. This is Dr. Andy, and today's guest is Kathleen DiChiara. the author of The Hidden Connection and Resilience. She's a functional nutritionist. She travels around the country and gives seminars to many different types of professionals, including medical doctors, to teach them about functional nutrition. So welcome back, Kathleen.
Thanks, Andy.
Kathleen, before we get into it, because I get so interested in what you have to say that I forget to ask for your contact information, would you give our listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Well, sure. Yeah, they can go to my website, which is my name, Kathleen, and then the last name is DiChiara, DiChiara. And so it's just myname.com, and they can book nutritional consultations there. They can book speaking events, and so everything is available there. Everything is done electronically.
Terrific. Okay, folks, if you didn't have a pen or pencil, we're going to be saying that probably twice more throughout the show. And by the time we're finished, I know many of you will want to get in touch with Kathleen. So a couple of questions based on what you said so far. Kathleen, many of our listeners do not know what the microbiome is. Would you explain that, please?
Yes, sure. So the microbiome, you know, is essentially a collection of our bacteria. We often refer to our bacteria as our commensal bacteria or our beneficial bacteria. We literally have 100 trillion microbes that we collectively refer to as the microbiota. And so they are of over 1,100 prevalent species of bacteria, but there are also viruses, fungi, and archaea. And they live in our mucosal tissue from mouth to anus. And this living organism is basically 90% of us. We are 10% human, 90% bacteria. And collectively, this microbiome living organism has a genome of 4.4 million genes. So when we think of the human genome, which is 20,000 genes, we can now compare that to the genome of the microbiome at 4.4 million genes. So we are inferior, certainly, to our bacteria's genetic profile. And so this really is an exciting thing to think about in terms of our capacity to use our microbes or our microbiome in terms of healing. The easiest way for people to think about their microbiome or their gut, people often hear about their gut microbiome or the commensal microbiome. For the most part, we're talking about the large intestine or the colon. That's where the majority of people's species are living or organizing, which is down lower in the colon, but certainly they line all of the gastrointestinal tract and the mouth and the vagina. And this is where our children first get inoculated, is when they move through the birth canal during birth, and that's their first inoculation of their immune system when they get exposed to the eyes and they gulp down the vaginal fluid and swallow those first species from mom. And then that's what makes up their initial immune system. And then some of those original microbes will get stored in the appendix. And then when throughout our life, when people get antibiotics, the appendix will release some of those ancient species to re-inoculate the microbiome after there's been damage following antibiotic use. So our bacteria really have this incredible function that has gone largely unappreciated up until just recently as we start to study it. But they are breaking down bacterial toxins. They're breaking down sugars, lactose, and oxalates that we eat every day. They're digesting our proteins into amino acids. They're naturally producing antifungals and antibiotics. They're regulating peristalsis, so when people have constipation, it's likely that they are missing many of the microbes in their large intestine. They're also protecting us against pollution and pesticides and mercury exposure because they methylate and degrade a lot of those, so it's very important that we have a healthy microbiome because this is what protects us from these exposures in our environment. They're also making our B vitamins like B1, B2, B3, B5, 6, B12, and vitamins A and K. They're also promoting T1 and T2 immunity and skewing that immunity up and down based on the needs of the body. They're making the neurotransmitters for our brain like serotonin and dopamine, so regulating our mood, making those neurotransmitters that travel up and down the vagus nerve, So when people have anxiety and depression, it's likely due to a poor gut microbiome because 70% of the serotonin is made in the gut. So when we see brain dysregulation, we know that it's due to a poor gut function and not a brain dysfunction. And they are regulating hormones, balancing inflammation, and so much more. So that, just to give people a general sense, our microbiome is so critical to health. And when we don't have it, like many of the children on the spectrum who have gastrointestinal issues, we are really missing a huge, huge opportunity to initiate healing throughout the entire body.
Kathleen, that was wonderful. I made copious notes here, and when I get to see you in person, hopefully in Chicago, I'll have more questions. And it's one of the questions that I had immediately was that if a child is born through a cesarean section, it seems that that boy or girl would then miss out on a lot of this. Is that correct?
That is correct. So that is, we know research shows that they have higher rates of asthma, higher rates of allergies, and they are likely to develop other autoimmune and other conditions later in life. So it is what we consider some of the first and early damages to the microbiome is the cesarean birth, partly because the first exposure, lack of exposure to the vaginal canal, but also the first microbial exposure is that of an operating room, which is the wrong kinds of bacteria. So they're getting skin bacteria, which is a different type of bacteria. So some advanced hospitals in the world are actually swabbing the vaginal canal and rubbing that over the mucosal areas of the baby. So this is an area that we're hoping, you know, will develop over time now that we're becoming more aware of the benefits. Certainly we need to reduce the number of cesareans to only those that are medically necessary and not have them be done for convenience. And certainly we will always want to be supportive of the mothers who have had cesarean because it is in the best interest of their life and the babies. And just to know that there are other opportunities where the baby can benefit, like breastfeeding is what we would consider the second feeding event. So after moving to the birth canal, if that opportunity is missed, they can use the skin-to-skin contact with the mom, and then the breastfeeding would be critical to then get those oligosaccharides to then feed the microbes that the baby does have and expose the baby to the next set of microbes. So, again, this prenatal education is so, so critical for moms to understand that these are immunological protection for the baby and can potentially reduce our risks of these children developing allergies and immune reactions later in life. Excellent question.
Well, this is such good stuff. And again, your last comments bring more questions, which we'll get back to after our brief commercial break. Folks, again, if you'd like to be in touch with Kathleen, that's Kathleen DiChiara. That's DiChiara is spelled DiChiara. KathleenDiChiara.com. And we'll be right back and learn more about the microbiome and functional nutrition and lots of important information.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Kathleen DiChiara, is the author of The Hidden Connection and Resilience. And Resilience will be out this spring. That's her second book. She's a functional nutritionist, and she's educating us today on the importance of the microbiome, the functional nutrition, and much more. So welcome back, Kathleen.
Thanks, Andy.
Now, you mentioned before we left for our commercial break about some more advanced hospitals are swabbing the newborn baby with vaginal fluid to give that child the benefit of the mother's immunity. And is any of this taught now in medical school, all these things that you're mentioning to me about the cesarean section and swabbing and so forth?
Yeah, you know, I wish I could say that it was happening more. I think that it needs to be, and certainly I think it's starting to, but not nearly as fast as it should. and the speed at which the information is moving is just not fast enough. And I think the consumer needs to take action. It reminds me of, you know, the just like the food industry, you know, people sort of waiting for the FDA to speak up and do something about the fact that we were aware that some of the things in our food supply are making people sick. And we just can't really wait around. And I feel like in many instances, the doctors have to really be in that position, too, that they really have to speak up themselves and say, you know, they have to do their own research, and then they have to push back on the administration and say, we want to do things differently. We know there must be a better way. I think it's very, very difficult for systems to change. And so you're asking policy and systems to change, and those things just historically are very, very slow. So I think that it's probably starting to trickle down in some of the research institutions, but for the most part, it's not going to happen fast enough to really influence the outcomes that need to happen to really prevent a lot of these conditions. And I think that it could. I think that if the information was getting where it should be, then it could make a bigger difference.
Well, what I like about it, it offers hope. Because
yes.
We can't do much about glyphosate, which is going to continue to happen. Can't do much about heavy metals. Can't do much about vaccines and all these things that you said to me in conversation once. They are with us, genetically modified food and antibiotics and so forth. So what I really enjoyed about our conversation prior to the show was that you're saying to me that we need to do something to allow our bodies to deal with these things since they're not going away. And I had never heard that before, and that, again, intrigued me. So that's part of my interest in what you're teaching. Kathleen, tell us about what the doctors say to you. And because I know you travel around the world. I know that you've given, I don't know, probably hundreds of conferences by now.
Yeah. Yeah, before we get to that, though, I love what you just said, but I want to just clarify one thing, because I know you and I have had some really interesting conversations offline, and I think it's really important. I agree with you that there's not much we can do with the fact that some of the things that we can't control are going to happen, that there are lots of things in our environment and certainly in our world that we don't necessarily have control over. They're going to be around. But I do think that we can strongly influence whether or not they continue, and that is by opting out of and not participating in, you know, in what we purchase, you know. So just really making the consumer choice is so powerful, because these organizations and companies and policy, they are driven by consumer behavior. So an educated consumer who is not choosing to actively participate in buying a certain food, or you know, saying, I don't want to have amalgam fillings put in my children's teeth. All of that behavior really drives the end product. So we really have to make these conscious choices and start opting out of the things that we know are causing harm. And they will go away. They will go away because consumer behavior really drives those things. So that's number one, is becoming aware of what is doing the damage and actively choosing not to participate in it any longer. And then the second part of that is becoming resilient and strong and healthy, so that the exposures that we cannot control, like glyphosate that's now in the land and in the soil and in the rainwater, and chemical exposure that's in our environment, our body is tolerant and able to clear it, so that we are not so vulnerable and so weak. So it's really a two-part thing. And I just want to really advocate for that, because I think people do feel sometimes that they're just one person and they can't do enough. And I want people to feel like whatever they're doing is powerful enough and it is making a difference, and to consciously make that choice. And so I just want to leave people with that everybody's participation is making a difference collectively. So to answer your question, about the doctors, are you asking what the audience, like how the medical community is receiving what I'm hearing?
I am, and I want to get to that, to what they ask you. Before we do, though, thank you for the clarification, because you clarified nicely to say, yeah, this stuff is with us, But that doesn't mean we can't make a difference. So I'm glad you clarified. So let's go next to questions that the medical community ask you.
Well, remember that people that come to listen to me are open-minded in the first place.
So they're
looking for information and they're interested, and so they're receptive from the get-go, and that makes a big difference. And so the feedback that I'm getting is yes, 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 and we want more. And it is, they're very interested, because I think in many ways doctors are victims of a dysfunctional system. They didn't study nutrition, and they'll admittedly say they didn't study nutrition, and much of their training is influenced by pharmaceutical information. So, they're really struggling because it's at the expense of, they don't have the nutritional training. They get medical training and pharmaceutical influence, and so it's very difficult for them to assess what the needs of the children might be and how nutrition can actively play a role in reversing chronic diseases. So I think part of it is the frustration on their part. And so they're very receptive to it. I think they feel that it's difficult for them to make recommendations because food and dietary changes is an area where people offer the greatest resistance. People generally don't want to change their diet or their behaviors. So I think what really needs to happen in order for us to make changes that are effective is for people to have collaborative care teams, for doctors, for us to move into family medicine practices and have collaborative care teams where there are health coaches in place, there are nutrition practitioners in place, that we're using good diagnostic tools, that children's microbiomes are being tested as the first line of defense, so we can look at the immunological markers, we can look at digestive markers, we can see how these kids are trending very early in life and make good nutritional changes from the get-go and prevent a lot of these asthma, upper respiratory issues, allergic reactions, and get them off to a good start. And I think if the doctors have these supports in place, I think that they would have the confidence to make these kinds of recommendations. So I think it's very easy sometimes for us to point the finger at the medical community, but I think in many instances there are some really great practitioners out there that feel frustrated as well.
Kata, you said something before that I underlined here, and you said that MDs are victims of a dysfunctional system, and I could not agree more.
Yeah.
And again, I don't blame them because it's not their fault, and it is a very dysfunctional system, and something has to be done because the problems kids are having, not just with autism, but all kinds of other things, attention deficit and a host of other problems, can be corrected, but we need to do things differently. Folks, before we take our break, if you'd like to get in touch with Kathleen, you can do so by emailing Kathleen DiChiara, that's DiChiara.com, and her books are The Hidden Connection and Resilience. Okay, we'll be right back.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Kathleen DiChiara, is the author of The Hidden Connection and Resilience, which will be coming out in the spring. She's a functional nutritionist. And so welcome back, Kathleen.
Thanks.
I'd like to, you mentioned a couple of things that I thought were interesting, lots of interesting stuff. You talked about collaborative change, people working together to bring this about. You also mentioned the importance of parents, people in general, just taking more responsibility for their health. And you mentioned that the difficulty with food, especially as people don't want to change their attitudes toward food. Now, I'd like to share something with you that a personal issue that I'd like to mention and also have our listeners hear it. About a month ago, I had a problem with high blood pressure, uncontrolled, was hospitalized for 3 days. And after those 3 days, I changed almost everything about how I do things. And they couldn't get the blood pressure down. It was right bad. And I said, what went on with me? How come I'm eating differently? The answer is I had enough pain. Mm. People don't change unless they have enough pain. Mm. And in this case with me, because you know, I was concerned about having a stroke or who knows what, and I said, wow, why am I so different? And I think it's pretty much the same way with a lot of this, Kathleen. We have a comfort zone. We get used to it. And then to get out of that comfort zone, something has to occur that makes us want to change. And I think that was also maybe the seed for everything you've done with your life now. But then the pain was working with your young son and having the pain of that and the fear of what could happen if you didn't do what you had to do, and it changed your life. Make sense?
It is, and I find that pain is a great motivator, but the minute people feel better, that motivation disappears. So it's important for people to remember, we see this a lot, certainly with when we have sick children or children on the spectrum, and that often leads to the dietary changes. Once the children feel better enough, then people get the dietary fatigue and they start to, you know, get lax with the diet, and they deviate or they make changes, and then the symptoms creep back in. So when we have those life crises that get us to make changes, they can be that catalyst for movement, but very rarely do they really keep us on track for a life and ultimately lead to life transformation. So what I have discovered, certainly for myself and what I try to teach in my practice, is that the only thing that's ever really going to keep us fully invested is a deep education as to why we're doing what we're doing. And so when I originally started my teaching, and even when I wrote The Hidden Connection, I broke it down into different set of principles called discovery, education, action, and prevention, called the deep approach. And discovery was sort of making those early connections. And then education was that second principle, which was, if you don't really fully understand why you're doing what you're doing, in other words, if you don't understand that these compounds in the food are doing this inside the body and what that function is and why it's important, then doing that for life will never really happen, because you just are not fully invested in understanding how incredible this gift is that you have, this incredible, beautiful body that you have been given, and all of these things that we are able to bring in and how they work with us in our own biochemistry. And so that action step and that being able to take the action every day through our habits and through our choices, and then preventing that illness from coming back on, to really teaching people to be in full control of their health. When you get people to that place, that they really understand what they're doing and why, and that it's serving their greater purpose in life, you don't have to worry about them teetering back and forth on these special diets. They fully understand what they're doing. They're in complete control. Doesn't mean they don't have good days and bad days, that they don't have days where they just, you know, don't feel well or get, it doesn't matter, because they're never deviating from the principles of why they're doing what they're doing or the lifestyle that they've chosen. And they always have that groundwork to go back to. It's a very, very different way of teaching people, and it's something they can sustain for life. And so it's just so important to get people out of that, like, you have to be at your diet or straight. That's okay if that's what gets people into the conversation, if that's what motivates them to come to me and say, I really need your help, you know, or my son has been in the situation, or we've just recently had a diagnosis. If that's what gets them to come to our practice and work with our team, great. But if they're expecting me to fix the autism or give them a special diet or put them on a meal plan, then that's an instant red flag that they don't really fully understand what needs to happen. And so we have to kind of coach them to that process. And for some people, I'm not the right person for them, because they're not ready for that. And some people will go away and then come back when they're ready for that. But for the most part, the people that that do make that change, it is life transformation.
Kat, you mentioned four principles, and I got discovery, and I got education.
Discovery, education, action, and prevention. So DEAP.
Okay, great. And you said something else too, which is kind of like also leads to something I I'm very into lately, and that is responsibility. Most folks will not take responsibility, and I've seen it myself. That's why I ended up having that crisis. I wasn't taking responsibility. I wasn't doing some things I should have done. And now, thankfully, I'm back on track. But I also like what you had to say. Maybe I won't stay back on track. Maybe I need to further educate and fully understand everything that's going on and take it from there. And when you say what we're doing and why, making that as kind of like the hallmark for our success. What are we doing and why? And then spending our life getting the right habits.
Yeah.
And, Kath, right. We're coming close to the end of our show, and we are at the end of our show. And folks, I timed that pretty good, I guess. And I want to, once again, give you Kathleen's contact information. It's Kathleen DiCiara, DiCiara.com, the author of two books, The Hidden Connection and Resilience. And once more, I want to thank our sponsors who helped us, were supporting us for this show, Neil Maroney and Glenn Wilhelm. And they are the makers of the Ion Cleanse, which is a foot bath that draws out heavy metals from the body. Their contact information is amajordifference.com, and we hope that you will look them up, find out what they do, because they have helped many, many people. Kathleen DiCiara, it was an absolute delight having you on the show today, and I hope to have you back after your book is launched.
Great. Thank you so much, Andy, and for everybody that wants to see our story in the documentary, I encourage them to visit secretingredientsmovie.com. That documentary film will be coming out within the next few months, and they'll see our recovery story featured there as well. So thank you so much for having me. It was really great.
Oh, thanks, Kathy. It was always wonderful having you on the show. Folks, thanks for listening, and I hope you will listen to us again next week.